Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Mona Shaw, how are you doing today?
I'm very well, Mark. Hope you're good.
I am doing well. Well, I know we have a guest on today, and I was hoping I get to interview him for a change.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, today we have Clem Turner. Clem is the managing attorney of the New York office, Holmeyer & Law. For the past 5 years, Clem has canceled numerous corporations and regional centers raising capital through the EB5 program on matters of structuring, strategy, securities law, and corporate law, ranging from direct $1 million raises to complex $600 million raises and everything in between. Clem Turner, welcome to EB5 Investment Voice.
It's great to be here. Thank you. In your lovely offices. Your lovely offices.
Well, Mark, the idea was that we've been having a lot of requests to have podcasts specifically related to developers. There's a lot of issues which are really, I won't say they're just related to developers, but developers have more of an interest in understanding them. And there wasn't anybody better than another attorney in the field who works with many other developers all over the country like ourselves and who really has a thorough understanding of this, which is why we welcome you, Clem.
Well, I appreciate the compliment, Mona, and the recognition. It's great to be here, and you know, maybe we'll work on something again sometime soon.
Right. Well, Mark, what happens a lot with all the developers who come to see us? I mean, they have wonderful projects, but they really don't understand anything about the regional center process, and they really don't understand whether or not it's viable for them to have their own regional center. Should they rent a regional center? Should they have a rental regional center do the raise, capital raise for them? Should they do it themselves? And there are so many complexities within this topic, especially given the new scrutiny and the new rules which are coming out relating to this. Clem, you get this all the time. Should I have my own regional center?
Yeah, no, I do. I do get that question all the time, as I'm sure you do. And I think the first question that you ask the developer back when you try to find out if the circumstances and background facts would justify them starting their own regional center is, how many projects do they typically do on an annual basis? You know, if they do one, maybe two, then maybe it isn't cost effective for them to pay the now $18,000 something filing fee.
That's right.
Up from six. You know, that's much more of a considerable deterrent. Plus the legal fees involved. You need someone like you to do the immigration work. You need a securities lawyer. You need an economist. You need a business plan writer. You know, you need a village,
right,
to submit an approvable. It's a 924 application for a regional center. You know, the outlay could be $100,000 or more.
Well, I would say it's typically a lot more than $100,000. If somebody's looking to put up their own regional center, by the time you've paid for all the reports and the fees, I would say that it's closer to $200,000.
I think that's, I'm trying to be nice, trying to soften the blow, but I think you should be prepared for that if you want to do it correctly.
Right, right. And again, you're correct that if you are planning to do multiple deals, it certainly makes sense. But I would argue something else also, Clem. I don't think it's just about multiple deals. I think now, and from what we're seeing from USCIS, it looks like USCIS want to see whether or not you can handle a regional center, all of the issues relating to bringing in an investor. I feel that they are coming down more heavily on whether or not there is enough scrutiny on the type of investor coming in.
I think that's true. And I think they've finally realized that they've approved, I don't know, approximately 1,000 yeah, of these. And I still think the number of regional centers that have actually ever sold a deal to an investor is still under 300.
Right, which means there's a lot of surplus regional centers, which leads me to my next question relating to this. Again, we get asked this all the time, and we have done it for a few developers. I don't want to put it up. I don't have time. By the way, what is typically the wait time for, so let's say, a regional center with a hypothetical business plan?
I think it's 9 to 12 months.
Yeah, about a year. So I don't want to wait. I want to go forward. Can I buy one and can you find me one?
Right, right. Well, finding you one is just a matter of going to the website and trying to find the names of all the approved centers in your area, which can take a lot of time, but at least the information is there. But you have no idea who these folks are. And maybe they're still actively trying to get their project off the ground. Maybe they've abandoned it. But at the end of the day, you could represent their last vestige that they have to get some value out of their regional center with an offer to purchase it. The question is, are they going to be sophisticated and negotiate a reasonable price with you, or are they going to be ridiculous and quote a price that's, you know, that's far beyond the worth of what it is that they're delivering?
Right. This has happened to us several times because we have put up a lot of regional centers which have done nothing. And they have been ready to sell it. And sometimes you're right. They're right. Asking for crazy prices for this regional center. Once or twice they even got it.
Oh, good for them. I haven't represented a client that's paid more than what I thought they should, but I have represented clients who've bought regional centers, and it's a lot easier when everyone's sophisticated.
Right. But what is the liability of buying a regional center as opposed to paying for somebody to set up your own regional center?
Well, it depends on if they've done a project or not, but I'm assuming that they have not. I'm assuming if the regional center's for sale, then they haven't been able to get anything off the ground. However, you do have, let's assume they had one deal at one point in time, and let's also assume that they drafted a PPM and offering documents and corporate documents and went out to sell it. Those documents are out there in the market. You know, to the extent they've misrepresented something in those documents, there is theoretical liability, although that would really be more from the SEC to bring, because if they don't have an investor, if they've never gotten an investor, then obviously there wouldn't be an investor to sue them if there was something wrong with their deal.
Oh, right, I agree. But I also think that you have to look at things like, say, the operating agreement. And you have to really carefully change a lot of things because you don't know if there is some hidden party or someone who has a share somewhere. And say you sell this regional center and a few years down the road, it makes a lot of money. Then some hidden party comes up and says, hey, I also own part of that regional center.
Right, right. I'm going to say two words that I think most developers who are familiar with EB-5 are sick of hearing. But you can't say them enough if you're a securities attorney or an immigration attorney. And those words are due diligence. It's funny. I was assuming a certain degree of due diligence when you buy it. You obviously have to look at the operating agreement, if the regional center is an LLC, or the shareholder agreement. You should petition the state to get any corporate documents that have been filed. Obviously, anytime you do an acquisition
right.
of a business.
But how would you know? Because this is another question which comes up. So somebody brought us a proposal for a regional center, to sell a regional center. And by chance, we found out that that regional center had not filed a 924 for 2 years in a row. They was just lucky that USCIS hadn't picked up on it and had closed them down. But
right.
In normal circumstances, first of all, it's almost impossible to find out whether they have filed it. If they don't know, if they haven't said yes or no, there isn't any register or any way you can check whether it's been filed. And secondly, say you spend all the money, you buy a regional center, you go through all the procedures, and then you find out that it's going to be closed down by USCIS.
Well, that would be a catastrophe. I mean, frankly, as a corporate lawyer, I would definitely leave the immigration due diligence to the immigration specialists. You know, that certainly isn't anything that I would feel qualified to involve myself in. But I would rely on you very heavily if we had a client that was buying a regional center to make sure that the T's were crossed and I's were dotted with respect to the immigration-related issues. It's interesting, though, there isn't a record of regional centers that have filed the 924.
There's no way of finding out if somebody has filed. Maybe USCIS will plan to do that in the future with all the fees that they're collecting.
Right, right.
Maybe they're paying somebody somewhere to do some software. But right now...
Right, right. I guess you'd have to have the regional center that you're buying show you the filing.
That'd be nice.
Granted, they could have done it and not filed it, but at that point in time, any good corporate lawyer that's doing a merger or an acquisition is going to put certain representations and warranties in the document. And one of those is going to be about information that's been provided to them in diligence, that's fair and accurate, there are no misrepresentations. There's also going to be a representation about their immigration status, you know, that they valid, they file everything they're supposed to file. And as between either of those representations, you would have a breach of contract claim, which would give you the ability to either seek redress from them. And one thing I try very hard to do in every merger that I do, I don't talk much about the mergers I do because I only talk about EB-5 when I'm with you and when I'm with, you know, the EB-5 folks. But we do a considerable amount of M&A in my practice, and we try very hard to always have some portion of money held back in escrow for some period of time.
Right. Actually, we do the same, especially on a case where you're buying a regional center because you have to file an amendment with USCIS, and that can take up to a year to get approved. And so what we suggest, and this is what we would recommend to anyone listening, if who's thinking of buying, don't put all your money down straight away. Leave some in escrow until your amendment goes through and you are actually qualified owner of a regional center. Because just because you have signed a deed and handed some money over, you're not eligible to be qualified unless you amend the designation. The regional center designation with USCIS, and of course USCIS sign off on it all.
Right, absolutely. You know, we may have beat that subject to death. It's hard to touch upon everything that's important about buying a business in you know, 5 minutes or less. But I think that's really good advice, and I think, you know, you should reach out to either of us or your corporate attorney, because there's a lot of nuance. There's a lot of different things you can do to protect yourself. Some of it's immigration related. Some of it's really just straight good M&A practice.
Oh, logic.
True. And some common sense always helps.
So we've talked about setting up your own regional center and some of the economies that you should have, 1 to 2 projects per year. USCIS is going to be looking for a couple things, such as can you run it, not just a developer, as well as purchasing an existing regional center. But is it not true that regional centers also need viable projects that perhaps you could rent or leverage an existing regional center without buying the whole thing? Or would those regional centers not do that in fear of diluting their current projects?
That's a very good question, Mark. For somebody who doesn't know too much about regional centers, that's a very good question.
Well, I have worked in the EB-5 industry for about 7 years.
Right. Mark is definitely more savvy than he indicates.
No. I play it. I'm not playing it down. Trust me. I that was the extent of my knowledge.
Many people only are interested in rentals, I would say, Clem, because they really don't want the hassle of dealing with USCIS and compliance. And actually, just before you answer that question, I have one quick question relating to owning a regional center. If you want to put one up, or if you want to buy one, if somebody has a regional center and they've just maybe had one project and they haven't filed any SEC compliance like Form D, does that make the regional center obsolete?
Not necessarily. If you've had a failed offering with the regional center that you want to buy, if there are no investors in the offering, if there are no investors in the offering, then the chances of a lawsuit by an investor are zero. And that would mean that you never actually raised any money. So if there was fraud in your project, you technically didn't defraud anybody. It's unclear to me how the SEC would ever find out that you were trying to defraud people. But let's say they found out. They would come after the individuals that perpetrated the fraud. But if the regional center has been sold and you can show that it was a bona fide sale, you know, at arm's length, it seems very likely to me that you could get the regional center out from under an enforcement action, but I really can't, under those facts and circumstances, envision an enforcement action happening if there hasn't been any money raised, any money stolen.
Okay.
You know, there's essentially no harm. So I don't see it becoming a blip on the SEC's radar.
Okay. Well, that just...
As a really practical matter.
Right. Well, that was just a question which had popped up. So back to Mark's wonderful question about renting a regional center.
Right. I think what you have to remember, and this is true if you're buying one as well, and I think your questions are kind of getting to this point, if you buy a regional center or rent one, whatever the reputation of that regional center is before you've bought it or before you've rented it is something that's completely outside your control. So if there was a fraudulent offering and for whatever reason the agents were able to sniff through it, or it was just a bad offering and the agents don't think much of the regional center, if you buy it, you are going to have to spend time actively rebranding it so that whatever the prior owners did with it and whatever reputation it has, you can overcome. You know, assuming that reputation is not positive.
I think that's if the name perhaps brings a bell. But right now, with the amount of regional centers out there, most of them have very generic names.
And, that's true.
You know, you can't really tell one regional center from the other. You used to. If I said NYCRC, you'd all, oh, yeah, right. We know which one you're talking about. But
right.
There are so many New York regional centers now. So
that's true. And you know, the names can get confusing. But it is much more of an issue if you rent one that may have active projects in the market. So interestingly, you could be competing against other projects both within that regional center and outside the regional center.
Well, this is our practical experience that if you have, there are two types of regional centers. There's a third-party regional center where the regional center people, the management team, don't actually have equity in any of the projects. And they're just basically like a third-party bank and raising money for a project. Mm-hmm. Or you can have a project regional center, and there are plenty of those around. And those tend not to rent out. You know, we have some big ones in New York, like Extel, like Related, like LAM. Mm-hmm. Those type of project regional centers, they just do their own projects.
Right. Most EB-5 practitioners do have a sense of which regional centers are going to rent out and which aren't.
Right. Well, if you have a... Mark's question was, will it dilute projects that they have? I think that really goes to the fact of whether you're going to rent a regional center and have them raise the capital, or whether you're going to rent a regional center and raise your own capital and just use that regional center.
Right. I think that's true. I think if the regional center is raising capital for you, I would guess currently that the level of due diligence would be higher, because the principals at the regional center are going to be tapping into their own networks, going into their agents, trying to raise money for your project, and they are going to want to make sure that that project is going to be successful. They are putting their reputations on the line for your project in the same way that when you pick a regional center, the projects that they've done in the past are going to impact the reputation of your project when it's affiliated with that regional center.
So, right. But, well, here's the problem. Even if a regional center decides that they're going to raise capital for a particular project, no regional center has no project, usually. They all have some projects, and the active regional centers is what I'm talking about. And they may not necessarily put your project ahead of the projects that they already have. So you might have a long wait before your turn comes, so to speak.
Right. What I'm seeing is a lot of rental regional centers, and let's use that term.
That's a new model. That's what I was about to say, yes.
A lot of rental regional centers, if they don't believe they have the bandwidth, a lot of them will turn down a project. A lot of rental regional centers will turn down the project if they don't believe they have the bandwidth for it. There are some that won't, and you know, they'll want to check, and you know, they may not have the best business practices. But I find some of the more reputable regional centers, if they don't have the bandwidth, they would rather either convince a developer to come back when they do, if that's a possibility, or you know, they would confess that they can't do the project at this point in time.
So it sounds like renting a regional center certainly is possible. And Mona, thank you for kind of diving in that a little bit more, because now I also see that you can rent a regional center to raise your capital, or you could just rent a regional center and you seek out the investors yourself. Perhaps the developers already have a pool of potential investors or a network that they want to leverage, and maybe they just want to rent or leverage a regional center in order to have a streamlined way to get in for that compliance without buying a complete regional center or setting up their own. And I can already tell each avenue we go down, it gets more diverse and split up. So I'm glad that we took the time to talk about it at a very high level, but I can see that there's a lot of questions that people could still have depending on what they want to do and where they want to go.
Right. I think we have a few more minutes, and some of the questions that have been coming to us are related to, really heavily related to this area. People do want us to dive into this area a little bit more. People are confused, Mark. They really don't know what to do. They don't know whether they should just go out and trust a regional center or try themselves. Often it's easy. Often, you know, you can just ask someone, do you have any sort of idea of how to go out and how to market? And here it really depends on the individual. Some people, even if they don't have previous experience, they're really willing to learn. They're ready to go to China and to other countries and to go to attend seminars and learn how to do it. And other people are like, look, no, we don't have the time. We don't want to do all of that. I would rather just pay somebody. I don't mind paying. And that leads us to our next little point that I really wanted to raise is the cost. What is the cost of renting a regional center and getting your own investors, or renting a regional center and having to pay a rental for them to raise the capital?
Well, I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on this, Mona, but from what I see, the cost for renting a regional center is typically, I want to say always, but I hesitate saying always because I'm a lawyer and there might be one instance in a thousand, but one should expect that there's going to be some upfront fee. It may be called a due diligence fee or some type of earnest fee or what have you. But, you know, I've seen that range anywhere from, say, $25,000 on the cheap end to $50,000 or even $100,000.
Well, that's the due diligence fee for them to if they want to raise the capital.
Correct.
But if I want to just bring my project to your regional center, for example, mm-hmm. and I'm going to raise the capital myself, how much is it going to cost me to, you know, use your regional center?
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, typically what I see, you know, something in the neighborhood of 5 to 15, which I confess is
five
a broad
to 15,000.
Yeah, per investor that comes through the regional center.
Well, I'll differ here because we've seen a bunch of different models. Lately, there are those regional centers who are just out there to, they want volume. So they'll be lower. So yes, I say five meaning 1% mm-hmm. Per investor. And then there are other regional centers which are very strict, and they want a lot more than just 1% because they feel that they have the burden of the reputation.
Mm-hmm. Not to mention the compliance, you know, the 924A, they have to file for every investor that goes through the center.
Well, it's going to be more expensive now.
Yes. So what are you seeing on the top end, on the high end through these centers?
We have seen regional centers for rentals for 2%. Not more than 2% if you're bringing your own investor. But then that 2% would be, or 2 to 2.5% would be because that regional center has a reputation.
Okay. So you've seen like 5 to 10. Yeah, I think
per annum.
Right.
Right. So in total, it would be 20, for example, 2%, if it's a 5-year break, would be 50,000 per investor over a 5-year period.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds about right. And I have seen it cheaper in similar situations, but most of the time it's in that range. And I've also seen a higher initial fee and then a lower fee for the subsequent years. You know, it really varies among regional center and it varies among their reputation.
Right.
You know, shockingly, developers, I hope the takeaway here for developers is shockingly, you know, you get what you pay for. You know, you get what you pay for when you ask someone to market for you, and you get what you pay for typically when you just reach out to a rental regional center. You know, obviously the ones with better reputations, even if they're not actively helping you raise the money, the fact that you are with that regional center can provide you some additional cachet, which can
right.
be helpful in your raise.
And if you are not bringing your investor in, say, I want you to raise the money for me, what kind of typical fees are you seeing per investor?
Then I think it's no longer 1 to 2%. You know, it's typically in the 5 to 6% range.
Yes, that's about the same.
Annually, you know, with that upfront, either due diligence fee or also I've heard it called a marketing fee of anywhere from, you know, I think 25 would be very inexpensive I've seen it, but I don't think I've seen it this year. But anywhere from, say, $50,000 to $100,000.
Right. So now you have, if a developer is listening and he can't decide whether or not to go for a bank loan or EB-5 financing, usually what determines it here is the time and how much. So if you're going to pay 6% to an EB-5 group who are going to raise capital and you can get a bank loan at 4.5% or 5%, then it's just a no-brainer.
There you go.
But most of the time, you're using EB-5 to take out something like a mezz loan, which is more like 13%. And that 5% to 6% savings could be considerable.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the lane that works very well for EB-5, taking out mezz with cheaper EB-5 capital and having an existing mezz loan, which we'll call a bridge. For immigration-related reasons, it has to be a bridge. But if you have an expensive bridge, you can take it out with EB-5 and be less concerned if the raise takes longer than expected or is slower to get off the ground because you actually have the money to do what you need to do.
Well, Mona and Clem, I really appreciate this this oversight on regional centers and how developers can either start, buy, or perhaps even rent a regional center. But let me ask you something. For the developer that's listening right now, could you give them three tips on either starting, buying, or renting a regional center?
Sure, of course, Mark. I think for me, the bottom line is when somebody walks in and they really want to put up their own regional center, as we mentioned earlier, the real question here is how many deals do you want to put through this regional center? Are you committed for a long-term period? Because EB-5 is not a short thing. It's not just a single deal. If you have a single deal, don't bother putting up your own regional center. Even if you have two deals, don't put up your own regional center. But if you have more than that, and you want to take on the responsibility of having compliance work, etc., even if you farm that out, then go for a regional center. You'll certainly save a lot more money in the long run.
So if you're a developer focusing on one project, focus on that development, not so much the regional center. Would you agree, Clem?
Yes, I would. I'd agree with that wholeheartedly. It's a lot of time and effort to get a regional center off the ground and a not insignificant amount of effort to keep it valid and current. If you don't have the deal flow to make that worth it, it won't make sense to you to do it. Even if you think so now, you know, 5 years from now, after you've done it for a project that's now in the books, you may question that decision at that future time.
Yeah, we have had a number of people who have said that they made a mistake of putting up their own regional centers. But at the same time, the converse has happened too. People have made a lot of money through having their own regional center as opposed to paying large fees.
Right. It's definitely a facts and circumstances analysis.
Well, thank you for that. How about another tip for a developer?
Well, I would say this, Mark, and we've touched upon it in a lot of different ways, but due diligence in any decision you make, whether you are buying a regional center or renting a regional center, having knowledge of what you're renting and what you're buying is very important. And just to add to that, it may be very difficult to get this diligence, at least from the immigration side, based on the things that Mona has shared with us. It is probably best for you to approach a service provider like Mona or myself or someone else who has regional centers as clients and deals with regional centers every day and has a firsthand understanding of the type of regional center that you want to deal with.
Well, I really agree with you here, Clem. I don't want to sell ourselves, but the one thing I have noticed is that recently a lot of people who really don't do EB-5 an awful lot have jumped into EB-5. And there's a huge amount of knowledge missing. And decisions that have been made in reliance on these type of individuals really come out to play a little later. So I can't really emphasize enough and stress enough is the amount of nuances and special terminology and the way EB-5 plays out is like nothing else.
Right, right. No, I agree. And you're not going to be able to look at a regional center's website to get a sense of any of this. You know, people who go to conferences every year, five times a year, and know folks and interact with people and have that firsthand knowledge can save you, the developer, a lot of time and potentially heartbreak.
Right. Another point I'd like to bring out, Mark, is the fact that, well, you know, I do teach EB-5 as a source of alternative capital, and it's not just for real estate. EB-5 has been utilized in charter schools and in transportation and in so many other, and hospitals and so many other different areas, which really have, you know, they're not real estate related, and they would not have got funding but for EB5. So I think if a developer has an area where they think it is a great area, but they really need capital to lift it up, don't be bashful just because it's just it's not a real estate deal.
Right. I would definitely agree with that. You know, we've done some interesting directs. I'm sure you have too. The transportation deal that you've done is really, really interesting. You know, we've done stuff in retail. We're doing something, you know, with fun kind of like club facilities. Your imagination.
The medical world has blown apart recently. Dentists, veterinary assistants,
right.
Vets, hospitals, these urgent care centers. There's so many of them now. And they've all used EB5.
I've seen a beer brewery that did a direct EB5, and it worked for them.
Yeah, well, we always insist that when we have a client like that we have to go and do our due diligence ourselves.
I can certainly appreciate that. Well, Mona, Clem, thank you so much for providing this insight on developers working with regional centers, whether it's starting their own, buying an existing regional center, or perhaps renting or leveraging just a portion of a regional center that's already running.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw and Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.